My name is Jalecia. It's July 3rd, 2017. I'm in Hudson through the Oral History Summer School for the Oral History Hudson Project, and I'm here with Cedric Bolton. Can you introduce yourself, Cedric?
Sure. Cedric Fulton.
Okay. All right. Can you tell me a little bit more about yourself?
I'm a lifelong resident of Hudson. You know, I lived here 46 years. I got a large family from Hudson, one of the biggest families from Hudson, you know, African-American. Father of two. I think that's my most important thing. Love being a father. I got an 8 and a 7 year old. Both share the same birthday, 1 year apart. So it's interesting to watch these two small people grow up. That's so different. But I just love Hudson. I'm a community organizer. I'm an educator. I'm an author. I don't know what else you want me to tell you, but that's just a start, I guess.
So you mentioned when we were setting up your community organizing work. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I'm a former employee of SBK Social Justice Center. I am still affiliated with the Social Justice Center through a partnership with Kite's Nest, which is another community organization, and we run a 5-week Social Justice Leadership Academy with 25 teens between the ages of 12 and 18, which is half of them are paid staff through a summer, you know, youth employment program, which we're, you know, we're proud to do. Also, I started out as a volunteer in 2012 when the organization was founded in the summer of 2012. I started out as a volunteer program coordinator. And then, you know, I transitioned into a full-time program coordinator to deputy director all the way up to executive director. And then we started a program, community justice advocacy program, where we advocate for youth all the way up to the age of 25. However, we say up to the age of 25, we don't turn anybody down. We advocate in the criminal justice system, juvenile justice system, school, social services, you know, in any human service field. And I'm the director of community engagement for that program. I also serve as the director of community engagement for the whole city of Hudson for the Social Justice Center. And I consult with almost every community organization. You know, I'm pretty much a community liaison between the organizations and the community. So it keeps me busy, you know, but I love doing it. I think this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Busy work, but yeah, it's nice. It's a job that you take home with you, definitely. How can you not, right?
Can you tell me more about taking it home with you? What did you mean by that?
Excuse me. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm fully invested. You know, I do take it personal. You know, and I always say, who best to build this community up than those that help perpetuate the stereotype of breaking it, you know, tearing it down. You know, I just growing up as a young person and trying to find my way, you know, myself and my friends, you know, we help tear this city down. You know, we help the morale go down with our young people. And, you know, now at this stage of my life, you know, and finding out my purpose, you know, or having a sense of what my purpose is, I do take it personal. You know, I love the city of Hudson. I claim the city of Hudson. You know, I take ownership of the youth in Hudson, you know. And when something, you know, uncomfortable or bad happens, I take that home with me. That's something that's on my mind constantly. And how can I fix this problem? How can I come in and bridge the gap, you know? So how can you not take it home with you? It's not like I'm leaving McDonald's and, all right, once I turn the fryer off, I'm going home and I don't think about it until the next day. No, once I go home, I'm constantly thinking about, you know, how, what did I do today? You know what I mean? And how did I impact those that I'm out there serving? You know what I mean? And more times than not, I go home saying I didn't do enough, you know, which is troubling. But I'm an optimist also, you know, and I always think that tomorrow there is something I can do better, you know. Not to say I achieve it all the time, but I definitely, I start my day off like that. I think I know that it'll affect my children, you know what I mean? The work that I do right now will affect my children later on. So I take it personal. How can you not? You know, I lose sleep over it, you know. I don't know. I get into my feelings a lot, you know, just seeing, I don't know, I think I'm sick and tired of what's been going on in the city of Hudson, you know, and trying to figure out what can we do as a community? How can we use our power to make things different? You know, I'm one of those individuals that I don't want to talk about it. I'm tired of talking about it. I'm tired of hearing about it. What can we do right now, yesterday? You know, I don't want to plan something out for tomorrow and let's do it right now. You know, and I think some of us do got the power to do that. And I'm the person to hold you accountable for it. You know. So.
So you talked about a few things about where you come from and your family and your growing up and the friends. And so can you tell me a little bit about where you come from?
Well, I'm the oldest of five. Let me start there. I'm the oldest of five of a mother that was a single parent. This sound contradictory, but she was very strong, very intelligent woman, very strong. But she was weak in the way of she fell to an addiction. You know, my mother was addicted to alcohol and she was addicted to cocaine. You know. Intravenously, you know. So, you know, just being the eldest and watching, you know, her struggle, you know, with addiction and keeping up an image also. My mother was very popular in the city of Hudson. She was one of the first black women to work on Warren Street. She worked at the bank. And, you know, I just, even still today, you know, I hear a lot of doors are open to me because of the relationships that people had with my mother. And a lot of things she hid. And she, you know, it was close friends and family members knew, you know, but a lot of the public didn't know. So she was able to keep that image. But just watching that struggle and being affected by that struggle, you know, I grew up not having a lot because of that. I grew up being verbally abused, physically abused, economically abused, you know, psychologically abused. In the midst of this addiction, growing up with a low self-esteem, you know, where I had to create a false self-esteem, you know, and having to take care of my brothers and sisters at a young age, you know, where a lot of my childhood was taken from me. It became a point where I left. At the same time I left, the crack epidemic in New York State was at its peak. It just hit the state. Many of my friends suffered the same fate in their households. So once we realized that this is a way that we can, you know, come out of the midst of our misery and things like that, we took on, you know, the selling drugs. And by any means, we were going to, you know, come out of the condition that we were in. We wasn't thinking about feeding our households, like a lot of other people would say, you know, like we were selling drugs to bring food home and things like that. Nah, we did it as an escape. Once we were out there, we got caught up in it. You know, we got so caught up in it. And, you know, people would warn us about jail, and most of us was like, jail is better than our household right now. You know, jail, if you're going to scare us with jail, that's not working. You know what I mean? So, and if we went to jail with so many of our friends inside of jail, it'll be the same thing. Nothing to change. So that was our mentality. You know, we became womenizers. we became, you know, just, you know, terrorists in the street. You know, the only time that we had some type of civil behavior is when we seen our elders. You know, when we seen our elders come around the corner, no matter what, we came back to our senses. You know, and we still got, you know, I still hold that in a lot of my friends. You know, even though we live a totally different lifestyle, you know, we, that was our anchor. You know, when we seen, you know, my grandmother and then, you know, her peers. When we seen them, those from the church, you know, the cursing would stop, the music get turned down, you know, we would put things in our pocket and say, yo, listen, everything got to stop until they walk, you know, away from the area, you know. But that was our little bit of, you know, civil activity, I guess, in the midst of the chaos, you know. So it was just a whirlwind of going to prison and going to prison and going to prison after that. I was fortunate enough to, school became easy. You know, I got bored very quickly in school because it was easy. Again, a lot of doors was being opened for me. I didn't take the opportunity. I went to college, you know, and then I went to prison soon after my mother passed away from HIV AIDS complications. She passed away, and soon after, I went to prison for the first time. I got incarcerated 5 times for a total of 17 years, all for the same thing, either a drug deal going bad, or a drug deal, you know. So, and going back and forth and going back and forth to jail, you know, and losing my identity, you know, again, going in there and have to put on another mask that really ain't me just to survive. You know, when I left my household and have to put on a different mask, you know, I didn't want people to know that my mother was addicted. You can't hide it though in this small city. You know, I didn't want people to know that I was poor. I didn't want people to know that I was shy. You know, I didn't want people to know that I was scared. So I'm putting on all of these masks to a point where I didn't even know who was me anymore. You know, and just watching my brothers and sisters mature, you know, at 18, you know, 16, 17, 18, and I'm in my 30s now and nowhere near a mature level, you know, still playing with toys and things like that. And then I have my children. You know, I have my daughter. And having my daughter, even then, that didn't stop me because I was in a court, I was in the midst of an image. You know, one night stand with her mother, didn't like who the person was, you know, wasn't up to my standards in my eyes, and I denied my daughter. And then had my son 2 days after I got incarcerated for the last time. And it seemed like everything just shrunk for me, you know. And I don't know what happened. I think that was a blessing. Every other time I got out and I was on bail and I ran, you know, and whatever. This time I had no bail. I had to sit in there in the midst of that misery and my own guilt, knowing that I brought people down with me also. And I had to deal with that. And that was the first time where really that was the beginning of me saying that something has to change. You know, something has to change. You know, this. You know, cycle of insanity has to change. You know, you got two people now, whether you don't, you know, want to acknowledge it or not, you got two people out there that's depending on you now, and they didn't ask to come into this world. You know, again, my son, where I was all for, you know, I was with his mother, I was married to his mother, and I was all for that. My daughter, and sitting in jail and having the blessing to say, listen, man, this is a great opportunity for you also. You know, and then gaining custody in prison of my daughter, you know, and coming home and taking on that responsibility. And then 2 days after having my son come in my household also, my son has not left since, you know, and this is 2012 since I've been released. So, you know, when you say where you come from, it's not like a physical place, you know, like, you know, yeah, I resided in the city of Hudson, but where I come from like misery, you know, I come from pride, you know, I come from strength, and chose, you know, I chose to go about it this way. My brothers and sisters didn't choose that, you know, I chose to handle my misery or my unhappiness in a certain way, you know, but where I come from, I don't think it's a physical place. I just think it's a mindset, you know. And where I'm at right now, also, I think it's a certain mindset, you know, that keeps me, you know, waking up and continue to fight that good fight that I think I'm fighting every day, you know. I think I had to go through all of that I went through to get to where I'm at right now, to be at least some semblance of a father to my children, you know. And it's not for me to say I'm a good father or a bad father. That's for my children, you know, to say. But, you know, to at least be a father. I got custody of both of my children, and they're in my household, and I'm proud of that. You know, all of my friends grew up without a father in their household, and every single one of my friends right now have their children in their household, except one, and he don't have children, you know. And it's ironic that his father was the only father that we ever looked at. You know, his father was in his household. All of our fathers... I don't even know my father. I met my father twice, and I'm 46, you know, so I'm proud of that, you know. I hope that answered your question.
Definitely. Jay, this is really me getting an opportunity to know more about you, so you feel free to answer in the best way that you see fit. That's what your response is, Griff. You mentioned your children a lot, and I wanted to know more about your family life. What does that look like?
My family life now, or my family life growing up?
However you want to respond to it.
My family life growing up, and again, like I say, when I say misery, you know, it was misery because of, you know, again, just watching the one person that I, like, I love my mother. You know, my mother's passed away in 1991, but, like, you know, I worship my mother. You know, I seen the strength. I seen, you know, the love. I seen the intelligence, all the things that I would want in a woman. You know, I seen all of these things, the beauty. And I chose to forget about all the other stuff, you know, the abuse and all of that. You know, I forgave my mother before it even happened. You know, I think I had that understanding what she was going through. I had some resentment. You know, I did have some resentment. You know, it was a time where I thought my mother didn't love me. And my mother told me one day that, you know, I didn't have to worry about you. You know, I had to worry about these other ones. I trusted that you were going to go out and make a way, you know. And in a way, she gave me some confidence. You know, she and I wanted to hear that. You know, I needed to hear that. But, you know, my mother was one of 12 children. From my grandparents. And again, you know, the folk name, proud name in this city, you know, goes a long way. I didn't go hungry. You know, I couldn't go hungry in this city. It was too many people that was gonna, you know, hold their hand out and give us something. I didn't freeze in the winter, you know what I mean? You know, I had things to do in the summertime. It was too many people around, you know. That was the great thing, you know. And so, you know, again, I had a big family. I had a strong, proud family, but I had that extended family too. You know, that community, the way I think a community should be. You know, we had it all. But we didn't have those strong male figures, you know, in our life. None of my friends, we didn't have those strong male figures in our lives. Now, you know, I'm so grateful that my friends had children at a young age where I can watch them be a father, you know, where now I think it made me a better father from watching them, you know. And a lot of people say, you know, like, oh, your children are so lucky to have you, and they don't know the half of it, that I'm so lucky to have them. Like, they saved me. You know, I didn't save them. They were going to be fine regardless. You know, they saved me. They gave me some perspective. They still save me every day. They stopped me from thinking certain things sometimes when I come in the house and I'm down and things like that, especially my daughter. You know, my daughter, you know, she jumps right on it. She has a really good gauge on my emotions. And she comes in and she tries to give me comfort all the time, you know, which is soothing. I love her for that. The same daughter that I denied, you know, this same young, you know, small person that didn't ask to be here now is a, you know, the, a cornerstone for me, you know. But I love having that, you know, it's myself and my partner. You know, this is a woman that came into my life. I met her 18 years ago, you know, and we lost contact and ran into her again and let her know I'm a single father of two, you know, and she embraced it, you know, and she took over my children. Like, they are her children now. You know, I think they're lucky to have this woman in their life. You know, especially my daughter. I can't teach my daughter how to be a woman and how to be a good woman. You know, you're going to be a woman one day because you're going to age to a woman. But can you be a good woman? You know, and I think she's teaching her how to be a, how to become a good woman. You know, somebody that has some integrity and good character. And helps me out with my son. You know, my son, I created a monster with my son and spoiling him with the guilt of my past. And he holds me to task for that. And she helps me out, and she puts a lot of things in perspective for that. You know, but I think I want to believe, you know, that my home life is wonderful. You know, I love my home life. I love going home and hearing my children. You know, I got a dog, and my dog loves me unconditionally. You know, it's funny. I walk in the house, and during the day, the children are at school, Melissa's at work, and Misha's there, my dog. And I walk in, and I know she's waiting for me at the door. She's barking, you know, happy to see me. And I walk in, and I gotta go to the bathroom. And I stop, and I say, you know what? She waited at this door for me. You know, let me stop for just a second and go back and pet her. So I'll pat her and acknowledge her, and then I'll go on to the bathroom, and then I'll come back and make sure that I got to take care of her, because, some, you know, I come home sometimes just to walk her, and she can't tell me, she can't open the door herself and go to the bathroom. I got to, you know, but I love that also. You know, I love that relationship that even myself and my dog have. Again, putting things in perspective from, you know, I was in an 8x6 cell. You know, I could have been in a box, you know, and so grateful for what I have right now, you know, wouldn't trade it in for anything, you know. Again, my children, man, you ask me about my children, it'll ruin the interview, because I'll talk about my children for 2 hours. For real, I love being a father. I think that's the greatest thing that I ever did, is become a father, you know. And it guides my thinking now. You know, it definitely guides my thinking. I'll be the first to acknowledge that I got an anger issue, you know. But decisions are made. Like, you know, a decision that I would have made 10 years ago, that thought might be there now when I get faced with something, but it may be there for a nanosecond. You know what I mean? Because, you know, it's there, and I got to acknowledge it, but my children are there. And my children pop right, you know, and like, who am I accountable to? You know, I can be selfish and I can continue to, you know, but I'm accountable to the love that I said I have for my children. So can't be sometimey with it. And you gotta, what are you willing to sacrifice? You know, what are you willing to sacrifice? Again, and coming from, you know, coming from, as men, we put ourselves in a box. You know, we put ourselves in this box, and this is how men and males supposed to act. And that box is a trap. You know, that box will trap you into doing something that'll cost you your life or cost you your freedom. You know, so I try to teach my son that now. Like, you know, don't get caught up in this box. It's okay to cry if you hurt, emotionally or physically. It's okay to cry, whether you're a man or not. You know what I mean? Yeah, you can, you know, you can show affection. You know what I mean? And things like that. And I say that to say, you know, like, if someone, you know, now where I would have lashed out at somebody, you know, saying certain things to me, now it's like, man, what's my priority? You know, where's things at? And it's a big leap. Trust me, it's a big leap from coming from where I'm coming from, you know, and like, you know, you work hard for this reputation. You work hard for this reputation. And now I'm working hard to eradicate that. You know, some people still see that. You know, some people still, you know, they like to revel in that. You know, makes me uncomfortable. And it, to be honest, like I straddle the fence sometimes. You hear these glory stories, and you get caught up. You sit there and you listen to it for 30 seconds or a minute, you know, and then you got to stop yourself and say, "Yo, listen, if you buy into this again, you know, you'll go down this path." You know what I mean? Like, oh, I don't even want to be around that. You know, and then stay. If you still look at me like that, then I either got to pull you up or I gotta not be around you. You know, because I'll get caught up. I know me. You know, I'll get caught up. I'm human. Mm. You know, and for somebody that's been looking for that compliment his whole life, I'll get caught up in those false compliments. You know, you telling me how much you love me as a gangster or something like that, when I'm a father. You know what I mean? Tell me something like that. Tell me how much you proud of me for, you know, helping these kids out in court or something like that. You know. So I gotta keep my triggers on the forefront also.
Wow. I'm just taking a moment to process everything that you're saying, and I'm practicing silence, really, you know, really trying to take time to listen. I wanted to get back to something you mentioned in the early part of the interview. You said you and your friend tore Hudson down, so it's your responsibility to build it up. That's very powerful. Can you explain to me what you mean when you say that?
Yeah, absolutely. I know the symptoms. I know the problems. I know the problems in my city. You know, I help cause some of these problems in my city. You know, you can go to the doctor and say I'm sick. You know, and the doctor can sit there. You know, I think it'll be remiss for the doctor to go and start treating you without knowing what the problem is. You know, you got to ask the patient what the problem is. You know, he got to tell you the symptoms. And I correlate that to the city and the city ails. You know, a lot of people come in and they say, I'm gonna fix this city. You have no idea what you're fixing. You have no idea what the problems are. You know, I have a keen sense of what the problems are here. You know, I'm from here, you know, and not only am I from here, you know, I'm from the disenfranchised. I'm from the marginalized, you know, the economically disadvantaged. You know, some doors are open for me, you know, but let's not get that messed up. You know what I mean? I'm still in the margins, you know, and I think it's my duty. I think it's my duty, you know, the opportunity that I've been given. And the tools that I've been given, the gifts that I've been given, no matter how small, I think it's my duty, you know, to go out and try to bring this community up. And I put that onus on my friends also. You know, again, you guys may not think that you're there. You do. You have assets. You are there. And it's your duty to give back to this city. You know, a lot of my friends, and I used to fight about this, a few years ago, you know, a lot of them, some of them moved out of the city. You know, they went to Albany, or they'll talk, oh, Hudson, and like, yo, you're from Hudson. You know, the reason you're thriving right now is because of Hudson. You know, Hudson built this resolve in you. Hudson built this strength in you for you to, you know, overcome the obstacles that you thought you faced. You know, and you got to find, even if you don't get back to Hudson, give back to the community that you're living in right now, you know, and you got your children are living in these communities, you know, and I always bring it back to Hudson. I would love for you to do that there, and I can tell the people here the things that you're doing there to give them some result, to give them some morale and boost, you know, to boost their morale, and you can do it in that way. But you know, just growing up and perpetuating the negative stereotypes that, you know, that. Anybody would have with, you know, young black men in the urban city. We did it. We perpetuated it, you know, and we would love to use the excuse that we had to do this, you know. And some of us may have had to do this. Some of us chose to do this, and we got caught up in a condition you know, that, you know, we just got, and that lifestyle is addiction, is an addiction also. You know, you're addicted to that. You get caught up in it, and you'll get caught up in a cycle. Some people did not come out of that cycle. Some people die. You know, some people are doing life in prison. You know, fortunately, we're here. We have the opportunity to make sure that those that's coming behind us don't have that same fate. You know, we can lessen these chances. And again, I think it's our duty to do this. You know, how can I go in the household and talk the good talk with my children, especially my son? My son is being targeted right now. It's a war against my son. It's a war against black men in this country. You know, how can I prepare my son? Am I going to say, here, take this gun, you know, take this knife and go out and fight for yours? Or am I going to give him some more weapons that'll get him further? You know, and the way to get him to buy into that is he got to see me out there doing this work. You know, and again, I take the duty seriously. I take it, you know, personally. It's hard. It's hard fighting against the condition of a people, you know, especially in this small town when you have, you know, the establishment, you know, and they're still here, you know, they're not dying off. They're passing it down to their children, you know. We're fortunate to have, in the atmosphere that's here right now, you know, that's sweeping the country, we're fortunate to have certain people come here with, and willing to spend certain money. They're willing to use their white privilege, you know what I mean, to be a voice. They're willing to sacrifice certain things. And I don't care what the reason is. I know what can be. You know, I'm not getting caught up, you know, like people get caught up and they talk about how AIDS got here. I don't care how AIDS got here. I know it's here. And what can we do, you know, to eradicate it? You know, I don't care how it got here. I don't care how drugs got. I don't care about the conspiracies and all of that. I just know this is a problem that's affecting our people. How can we eradicate it? How can we alleviate it? And it's the same thing. You know, I don't care why these people are coming here and want to help. I just know they're here and we should take their help. You know, we don't have to sell our soul, you know, but we need to recognize it for what it is, and we need to go out there and bring this city to where it needs to be, where it should be, you know. And I believe that our young people are the way to go, you know. And I hate to say it, like individuals, like even my age, I'm 46. We're so, you know, you're either in the fight and you're so angry that you're blinded, or you're conditioned, you know, and you're saying that no matter what, nothing's going to change, you know. And then, and you can, as you go up in age in this city, from what I see, and black and brown people, economically disadvantaged people, because they can be white also, you know, if they're economically disadvantaged, they're conditioned also. They, you know, it's a condition. But as you go down and you look at these young people got to fight in them. These young people, all they need is the resources, you know. All they need is space, you know. And we can educate them, and we can give them that space. We can give them that resource and stay out of their way. Stop telling them what they should be doing. They know we should trust them, you know. And if we look at history, everything that was significant that happened and it was for positive happened from young people, you know. So that's where I'm at, and that's why I wanted to become a youth advocate. You know, I, part of the reason, again, you know, my voice being taken when I was young and not wanting anybody to go through that, you know, and lose their voice, because I know that, you know, the detriment in that. But at the same time, saying these young people can save us, you know, and how can we put them on the right platform for them to save us? You know, how can we give them the right tools for them to save us? You know, and that's where I'm at, you know. So that's what I meant by saying, you know, who else? You know, who better to do that? You know, if not us, who? Who else? You know, again, I'm 46 years old from the city of Hudson, and for 46 years, well, I say 41 of those years, nobody's been doing it. You know, our elders attempted to do it, but they attempted to do it. It's like they got along, you know, they went along to get along, you know. That got to change, you know what I mean? I think they had great intentions, but, you know, there's a lot of people in the graveyard with great intentions. There's a lot of people that's in prison with great intentions, you know. People with great intentions ain't in history books, you know. So that's where I'm at. That's what I meant by that, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me a bit more about the people, like meaningful relationships, a relationship that meant a lot to you?
A relationship that meant a lot to me, absolutely. There's many. You know, I love the, you know, one of the great things I love about Hudson is the relationships, the familiar relationships that we had growing up. I'm still connected with those same families that was connected to my mother, that was connected to my grandmother. You know, my grandparents came up here, you know, I don't know how long, you know, 80 years ago, you know, from maybe about 60 years ago from South Carolina, you know, and you know how it was that migration from the deep South that came up here, you know, and all of those relationships, you know, in this small city and still having those same relationships, you know, where you call, that's my cousin, but there is not any blood relation. But you've been saying that and they've been so close for so long. You know, that's one of the great things I love about Hudson. But the most significant, I think, for myself was my stepfather, my two youngest sister's father. He was Jamaican, and he came over. And my mother had three children when she met this man, you know. And he was older, picked apples for a living here, hard working. And this dude taught me how to, he gave me some semblance of how to be a man, you know. He took on that role, you know, he took on that role of raising not only his two children, but my mother's children also, without batting an eye, you know. I love that, you know, that strength, you know, that dignity, that class that he had, you know. He had some swagger, you know, that we wish we had, you know. He had that without having to project that, you know. But this dude used to sit down and talk to me without judging me. He never told me what I was doing was wrong. He would just show me certain things, and I got the message. I knew what he was saying, you know. I just love that about him, you know. I always tell my sisters, you know, like, yo, he wasn't just your father. He was my father, too, you know. And they have no problem with that, you know. But I think that was the most, outside of my immediate family, you know, like, I think that was the most, I'm so grateful that he came into my mother's life. I think he gave my mother some happiness before she passed away. You know, my sister was 9 when she passed away, but I think he gave her some really good quality years, you know, when he came into her life. He gave me two beautiful little sisters, you know what I mean? But just, you know, just that letting me know that he was there for me. You know, I know you in these streets. I know you doing whatever, but you can come here. You know, I know how it was before I got here, but you can come here, you know, and I'm here for you. And never judged me. He never judged me, and I appreciated that. I was in prison when he passed away, and I was like the letdown, like, wow, man, I couldn't even be there, you know, when he passed away, you know. And I think he was sick for a while and didn't let anybody know, you know. I hear this from his friends, and I still talk to his friends today. But this dude, man, had this you know, this strength about him, you know, that I would wish that I can have, you know. And again, you know, it you know, I like to look at my friends and say, you know, I credit them for me being a good father to my children, you know. But this man also taught me how to what being a father is, you know. Growing up and having relationships with women that had children, and always remember that, like, yo, you know, this is their house, you know, I'm eating their food, no matter how much I'm bringing in here, you know, this is their place, you know, and I gotta recognize that, you know, you can't just get in a relationship with a woman and not have a relationship with their children, you know what I mean, and the impact, if you don't have that relationship, you know, the impact, I think he showed me that, you know, but I wish he was here right now, you know, for me to lean on, you know. But that's my most significant relationship, you know. But there's institutions also that I had, you know, relationships with. The daycare center, you know, that was the first place that I really went. And, you know, those best friends that you meet, you know, some of these friends, and still see them to this day. We still have these ties today. Like, hey, you know, one of my friends, he's married to this girl, and I always tell him, like, man, you know, you say you her best friend. Like, that was my first best friend. You know, we was together when we was 3-4 years old. You know, and things like that. Those were, you know, those places where you meet these people that is still significant right now in your life. Some of these women are just retiring. You know, I'm 46 years old. I was there when I was 3. Some of these women that were in there showing us, you know, nurturing us and caring for us and wiping our nose and things like that, they are just retiring right now. That says a lot. That says a lot of their dedication to their work, you know what I mean, and molding us at that young age, you know. Again, those are some of those women that no matter what we was doing in the streets, when they came around, when they walked up the street, when they was walking past, we were like, you know, you need help. You know, we was on the bus and they got on the bus. We get up and let them sit down, you know, things like that. You know, we was making sure, like, you know, these are ours. These are our elders, you know, and we claim that, you know. But that's just one. The daycare center, the boys club, you know, just going to the boys club and being around your peers. You know, and that, you know, having that competition and all of that. And again, I got the same friends that I had since the 4th grade right now. You know, the same 6 friends that I had in the 4th grade where I just had a birthday. We had a birthday dinner last night with one of my friends. He just turned 46. Since we were 10 years old, we've been together, you know. But that's, you know, the boys club, you know, having that place that we can go. And play basketball and lose everything. You know, we don't have to worry about no food in the house. We don't got to worry about it. We going home and getting, you know, getting whooped. We ain't got to worry about, you know, whatever. We in the boys club, we playing basketball. Them little 3 hours was there, we was lost. You know, we was lost in our own thing. And that was great. You know, some of the elders that ran that place, you know. And we're getting back to that. We're getting back to certain individuals running the boys club, you know, running the youth department, that can be significant people in the lives of our young people, as opposed to somebody that's just being paid, you know, and the same old, you know. We're getting back to that, you know. Bliss Tower, you know, I grew up in Bliss Tower when I was real young, you know, and those meaningful relationships that you had, you know, that lived on your same floor. Or live, you know, a floor up, you know. We played in the hallways, we played in the back steps together, and still friends right now. You know, these are the places where, you know, these are the people when you didn't have anything to eat, you was going to their house to eat, you know, and their mother knew what was up and didn't say, you know, they didn't, you know, get on you about it. As soon as you walked in the door, they was like, yeah, go wash your hands and sit down, you know. An opportunity for you to sit down and eat, and, you know, they didn't scold you, they didn't judge you. If you did something wrong, they get on you, you know. But if you didn't, you know, these are the people that, you know, you felt safe. You know, these were the safe places, you know. And that's just a few, you know. But I think those are the 3 most significant places for me growing up. And as I look now, I think there are 3 significant places right now in this city, you know. Our youth department, the daycare center, you know, because we got a lot of young parents out there, you know, that's working, and they single parents, and they don't have a place to bring their children, but they can bring them to the daycare center, in the daycare center will raise these children while they mother get on their feet and things like that. You know, our youth center, we know how significant our youth center is, you know, and then the one project that we have in the city, the one, you know, the major housing is Bliss Tower, you know, and there's a lot of things going on with that, but it's significant to a lot of people's lives. Some people, it's the only thing they know, you know. They don't, it's a lot of people that don't leave Second and Columbia and Second and State. That's where they are. They don't go anywhere. If they go anywhere, it's to the shopping center and back, to the hospital and back, to the doctor and back, to school and back. You know, you tell them it's not significant. You know, so it's crazy that the three places I think that's had a big impact on me, I think it has a big impact right now still, you know, 40 years later, you know. And I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I got a good pulse. I think I got a good sense of the pulse out in this city. I told this lady that this thing gonna be boring.
No.
Yeah.
I don't find it boring. It's really nice to hear about your experiences. And you talked a bit about, like, growing up and having the people who were in your community, the relationship, the important relationship you had with your stepfather and the ones you have now with your children and your partner. Can you talk to me about the people who are in your community today?
In what regard? Like, because we could talk about the inhabitants, you know what I mean? Or we could talk about those that's, you know, that's fighting. Those that's, you know,
I'd love to hear about both. Or you know, however you feel, in which capacity you want to answer.
You know, cause, again, the people in this community, as a director of community engagement, I find it very, very difficult to do my job effectively. Meaning, I can go out and I can fight and I can advocate and I can advocate and I can advocate. And I can bring the information, you know, but it's very difficult bringing the community to the information, you know. And it's frustrating, you know, it's so much apathy here, you know. I'm in the community every day, you know. I make it my purpose to go to the community if I'm physically able, you know. I go into the community because I live pretty much outside of what I call the community, you know. I live on a quiet street, you know, all the way near Oakdale. And but I make sure I come down to what I call the hood, you know, it's the hood. And coming down and just, you know, hearing about the misery, you know, hearing about, you know, the lack of resources, hearing about them complain about the lack of community leaders, you know. There's people here, there's people that will call themselves community leaders, you know, but if the people don't look at you as a community leader, that's a lot to be said, you know. You got a lot of people that are saying, what's being done to affect us positively right now, you know, and that's a hard question. You know, when you really can't answer them questions, you know, you can't readily answer them questions, man. It make you question your own world, you know, for real. You know, but I want to hear that. I need to hear that so I can continue to go out and try to make these things happen. But it's very, very difficult. You know, you got proud people. You know, these people got proud, you know. But I just think a lot of them have succumbed to the condition that they're in, you know, especially when you got, you know, the parents of our school in the Hudson City School District, the parents of the students has a 40% graduation rate, you know, and you look at that and you say, wow, you know, so how do we expect them to help with homework? How do we expect them to help out when they go to court? and things like that. Some people don't know, and some people don't know they don't know. You know, so they just say, F it. You know, one of their children get in trouble, they go to court on their own. Once they go to court on their own, you know what's going to happen with that. They getting put on probation. It's the school to prison pipeline. You know, they automatically, they getting funneled into the system. You know, and you think that the parents don't care. No, they care. It's just that they caught up and saying nothing's going to change. You know, but then there is some community leaders out here that's out here doing the work. Unfortunately, some of them don't look like you and I. You know, we joke about it, but it's not a joke. You know, the liberal white woman out here, you know, that's who's funding the movement. That's who's doing the most work in the movement. You know, and it's sad, but it's real. You know, that's who the community leaders I see. You know, and I got and I would be remiss not to mention them. You know what I mean? I call myself a community leader, you know. There's a few others. There's a few others that I can say, you know, that I can look at and say, you know, there's a gentleman. He's our elder. He's our oldest supervisor in this city. His name is Ed Cross, Reverend Cross. And I respect him. I respect everything about him. The service he's given, over 40 years of service to this city, you know, he has sacrificed, you know, and he's still got a voice, you know, and they're moving him out. You know, they made some laws in the common council in the city to move him out, which is unfortunate. And I think he was ready also, you know, to hand over the reins. But I think he was a strong community leader. You know what I mean? I didn't agree with everything, you know, policy wise, but dedication, absolutely. His dedication was there, and I know his intent, and I know his heart. You know, there's some people that wouldn't be recognized because they're not popular, but they're popular amongst the people. You know what I mean? That do things. And they do things without the recognition that I would call a community leader. So we do have some, you know, we do have some individuals out there that's gonna, you know, that's still fighting, you know, and they fighting behind the scenes, but they fighting, you know. But there's not a lot, you know, again, that look like you and I, you know. We building them. You know, we're building these community leaders with these young people, with our Social Justice Leadership Academy, you know, with Operation Unite, you know. She's a community leader, I think. I think, what's her name? Elena Mosley. You know, I think she's a community leader. You know, she's doing a lot to help out young people. Miss Pam Badilla, you know. I think she's a community leader, you know. There's another woman named Miss Toni Cross, Reverend Cross' sister. She's a community leader, you know, and she's a community leader that, you know, she did a lot of work, but her quiet pause is remarkable. You know, she lives on Fifth Street, and a lot of activities on Fifth Street, you know. But her presence there is comforting, you know. And those young people love it. You know, they know who she is. They recognize who she is and what she brings to the table, you know. And I think that's why they'll be okay on Fifth Street. No matter, you know, you got the rhetoric, the negative rhetoric about Fifth Street. As long as she there, I'm comfortable with Fifth Street. You know, because there's times where I worry. I definitely worry about my young brothers and sisters up there, you know, falling in the same pitfalls that I fell through. But I just know that, for the most part, it's going to be okay up there because she's up there, you know. But, and it's a shame that I can't just readily name, you know, these community leaders you know, but those are the ones that I could name, you know. So it lets you know that there's a lot of work to be done in this city, you know. There's a lot of work to be done in this city. And again, I'm just grateful for whoever doing it. I don't care what you look like. Let's help these young people out. You know what I mean? I'm going to be all right. Let's help these young people out, you know, where they don't have to go to these. And you know, there is no safety net programs here. You know what I mean? So let's try to get it where they don't have to go searching for these safety net programs and put them on a level playing field. A lot of people that look like you and I, you know, that's in this city, you know, they don't have a house that was passed down to them, you know, things like that. You know, they don't got this trust fund and all of that, man. These people got to work hard. And I don't want to have it where, you know, we coddling the youth, you know what I mean? But I want to give them some type of direction where it's a level playing field. And we can get there, you know what I mean? And we can get there. And these people, I don't think they forgot about that fight also, you know. Yeah. I liken myself to a foot soldier. You know, I'm on the ground. I'm on the pavement. You know, I'm not on the white horse in the front, you know, and talking about it. No, I'm on the front line, on the ground, boots tied up, you know, and that's who I can identify with, you know, that's who I can identify with, you know. Again, there's a lot of people that talk a good game, you know, but a lot of people out to get a check, you know. Of course, we got to feed our family. But at the same time, you know, you can have a White House in the midst of chaos. It's you dressed up garbage can.
I wanted to get back to something you brought up earlier about your roles as a your identity as a father and your identity as a community organizer are very important to you. Are there other identities that are important to how you've, like, what other identities are important to shaping how you've become, like, what you've become today?
No, I think that pretty much defines me. I think I'm a great friend. You know, I think I'm a great friend and brother. I'm not a good listener. I talk a lot. That's probably why I was asked to do this. I do talk a lot. I listen. I can listen more. You know, but I think I'm a good friend. I think I deal in loyalty. Even at the detriment of myself. You know, and again, that's part of the trauma of growing up the way I grew up. Where I always wanted to belong to something, and I think what threatens me not belonging to something whole is disloyalty, you know. So I try to do my part in being loyal, trying to hold myself accountable, you know, and really having a you know, getting a better sense of my identity, of who I am. You know, again, you know, there was a time where I was a womanizer, you know, a drug dealer, committed violent acts, you know, and being something other than what I am, you know, really what I wanted to be, you know, because, you know, I always had a conscience. I always felt guilty about certain things. And now being comfortable saying, look, this is who you is, you know. Embrace it. This is who you are. You know, it was a point where I didn't like who I became. You know, everything was stripped. This was right in 2009. I just got arrested. And I was like, everything left. You know, everything left. Like, yo, man, you just got arrested. You know, this girl just got arrested with you that didn't have anything to do with anything. You just destroyed her life. She just had a child. Your child is left out there in the street, you know. And me being arrogant at that time, and I used to look down on people like that, that you know, didn't take care of their children, and their children was being taken care of by somebody else. And I'm like, you have become one of them by your own actions. You got two children out there. You know what I mean? And they're not being taken care of by you. You know, you a hypocrite. You know, and again, me being somebody that care about what other thought about me. So I'm in there and I'm destroying myself, but I was destroying what needed to be destroyed, you know, and putting myself in a program. I signed myself up for a program, incarcerated. I was in a medium level and I fought to get into the highest level, you know, to maximum security so I can get into this program. And this program it begins to strip you too of who you thought you was, or you thought you was, you know, and I got to a point where I didn't like who I was, but this is who I am. And then it was like, all right, but what can you be? You know, and I started working hard to become something different, you know, but latching on to some of the positives, you know, and it's like, you know, again, I say I got the same friends since I was 10 years old, you know, and being accountable to that, you know, not being afraid to tell friends when they're wrong, you know, and rescuing them in that, you know, and putting yourself out there when you need that help, and going to these friends and being vulnerable, you know, and accepting that help, you know. And I love those relationships. You know, I cherish those relationships that I got with my brothers, you know. I think I'm a really good friend. You know, I think I got some really good friends too, though. You know, I think it go both ways. Yeah, we call each other brothers. We don't even call each other friends. We raised each other, you know. But being a father, you know, first and foremost, being a father, you know, a good partner to my, you know, to Melissa, as much as I could be, you know, and being married to this work, you know, I don't even have to be a community leader. Just give me a role. Give me a role and I'll do the best of my ability to do that role if I believe that this is going to take our young people where they need to go, you know. But I love that work, you know, and I love being recognized as somebody that's in the community trying to help, you know. And I played many roles. I've been on many levels, you know. In order to lead, you got to learn how to follow, you know. So I have followed graciously, you know. You know what, though? And speaking like, I don't think I'm being truthful when I say not looking at myself as a leader. I'm a born leader. I've always been a born leader. And I try to be humble about it. And there's times to be humble. But I am a leader. And I embrace that. I'm a leader. I'm a born leader. You know what I mean? And how effective I am, again, that's not up to me. I think I'm effective. I think I can do more, absolutely. You know, I thrive to do more, but yeah, I'm a leader. You know, but nah. Anything other than that, you know, I don't know. I'd probably be overwhelmed. You know, I like to do a lot of other things. I love to do a lot of other things. You know what I mean? But I love doing those things. You know, I love being a father. I love being a community leader and an organizer. You know, and I love the relationships I have with these men that I grew up around, you know, and being an uncle to their children, you know, and things like that. I love that, you know. And it's therapy for me, you know. It's definitely therapy for me. I'm still addicted to that lifestyle, you know. Am I living that lifestyle? No, but it's on the forefront all the time. You know, I see a nice car, I still get, you know, those feelings. Is it there for a long time? Absolutely not. But they're there, you know. You know, I smell marijuana sometimes. That thought will come there, you know. But it's there for a short period of time. I know what my priorities are, you know. I like to dress nice, you know what I mean? But sometimes I know you got to sacrifice. I love the confidence my children get, though, when they dress nice. So that means that I may have to dress a little bit less than what I like to dress, you know, and things like that. You know, I like to fish. I fish a lot. You know, it keeps me from straddling that fence, going to hang out in places that I know would be a detriment to me if I stay there long. You know, I could stay on the water a long time, and what detriment I get. You know, I get a lot of omega-3s when I eat the fish, you know. But that's just me. I try to simplify a lot of things, man, because I know me. I'll destroy me quicker than anybody else can destroy me. You know, I'll get caught up in my addictions and my emotions and my, you know, what I think people may owe me or whatever like that, and I'll be lost again. My children will be lost. I'll be lost, you know. I just love this city, man. For real. I love this city. I love the city of Hudson. I love everything about it. I love the smell of it. You know, I love, you know, certain people that still epitomize Hudson. You know, certain places in this city, you know, because I still think about, you know, I think about those glory days. You know, I still think about those glory days when I was in my teens, you know, and things like that. You know, and like I said, it may have not been ideal, you know, but it was us. You know, this was us. You know, this small city. This was us. You know, I just love it. You know, and I want better for this city. You know.
You talked about the development of the city and the differences you saw growing up versus now. Can you talk to me about some of the changes you observed in Hudson?
Yeah, on many levels. I can talk to you about, let's start from the ground up. I think that some of the changes is the lack of leadership. Mm-hmm. I think it's, you know, the lack of leadership. I hear a lot of times, you know, a lot of people, they say, you know, these young people don't got no respect. And it's, you know, not only young people, you know what I mean? Like, you know, people my age don't, you know, like younger than me, they, you know, we lost that respect. You know, I haven't. It was the time what I did, but I, you know, I gained it back. But, you know, they lost people that they can look up to, these young people, you know. There wasn't no positive role models. Again, you know, 85, 86, with, you know, the crack epidemic hit, it took away a lot of potential role models. You know, you got people my age that's grandmothers right now, you know, and some of them just coming home from prison. You know, some of them are in prison, you know. Where's the role models? You know, so yeah, there's a big difference. We had role models in the form of our grandparents and things like that, and our elders, you know. But you look at these institutions, man, and the only consistent institution, I think, positive in this city is the daycare center. You know, the Hudson Youth Department, man, you know, it went downhill. You know, again, we fortunate to have the people that's there now to build it back up. But, you know, the Hudson Youth Department lost its way. It wasn't a safe place for people anymore. You know, nobody was going there. You know, I think our Warren Street was a comfortable place to be. A lot of these stores that we could go into, and I remember going into some of these stores without a dime. And my grandparents sent me there, particularly my grandfather sent me in the store and said, go get this. And when I went down there and I said, yeah, you know, my grandfather sent me down there. I didn't have to say a name or anything. They knew who I was. You know, this is Henry Fulton's grandson. And I would leave out of there with a bag of stuff and never had to pay for anything. My grandfather would settle that later, you know, and things like that, where now you go into a store and you don't know who these people are. You can't buy a bottle of milk. You can't buy a loaf of bread from somebody that look like me. you know, and I love my brothers and sisters on these corner stores, you know, but, and I'm grateful for their opportunity, but those from this city, you know what I mean, and from these communities, you can't go in the store and buy a loaf of bread from somebody that look like you, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's different, you know, the whole Warren Street is different, you know what I mean? What can I say about Warren Street that's positive for my community? I'll waste your time. I will sit here all day talking about nothing. There's nothing, you know. Warren Street don't even look like the Warren Street that I grew up in. You know what I mean? At all. You know, I can start from right here and walk all the way up, and I can go on every single block and say this was here and this is how significant it was for this being here, and go all the way up. And right now, today, I can't do that at all, anywhere. You know, I know the intentions, what they said it would have been, but it has not come to fruition. Warren Street is totally different. You know, the whole city landscape is changing. You know, they call it the new gentrification. They say gentrification is good. And they talk a good game, and they talk about, you know, the development and things like that, and it's pushing people, black and brown, and economically disadvantaged people out of this city. You know, and they're pushing them and pushing them and pushing them further into the margins. Big change. You know, there's a lot of, like they say, programming for youth. We always had something to do when we were younger. Always. You know what I mean? Now, people are fighting and tripping over themselves to make a dollar and saying that they're helping young people out. You know what I mean? And I don't see it. You know, I don't see it. It's even more of a problem than it was then. You know, even then when we had a lot of things to do, you know what I mean? The city that was the condition was bad for young people in Hudson. It's worse now. You know. So there's a lot of changes. There's a lot of negative changes. There's not a lot of positive changes. But again, I'm an optimist. We need to fight. We need to continue to fight, you know. But this city, there's a lot of potential in this city. We just got to get out of our own way. There's a lot of racism in this city, man, that there's a lot of racism in this city that certain people won't speak of. But again, these young people had no problem facing that, you know what I mean, and wanting to do something about that. Whereas before, it was get along, go along to get along, you know. Maybe that's one of the positives, you know. But you look at Columbia Street, you look at Lower State Street, you look at Providence Hall, Bliss Tower, the low rise, Schuyler Court, Hudson Terrace. No different than what it was 30 years ago. It's no different. Same people is there. The same condition is there. You know what I mean? But certain people are trying to capitalize on that. And when they capitalize on that, those same people that's there, that been there, will not be there. You know what I mean? Where they gonna be? Where they gonna be? You know? Where they gonna be? So, I don't know. That's a hard question, you know, just to ask the differences of then and now. You know, I don't know. I hate to sound like that, too. You know, to listen back to, you know, me answering this question, I probably feel ashamed, really, because as a community leader, you know, I probably should have a better answer. But at the same time, it speaks to, that's my reality. It may not be somebody else's reality. That's my reality.
And that's what we're interested in documenting. And I think you spoke to those changes.
Yeah, it's crazy, you know. But things, again, with if we do the job we said we're going to do, and we do it with fervor, things will begin to change for the positive, you know. But right now, it's the same old, you know. Other than Warren Street. Warren Street just went, you know, the revitalization, they said. You know, it looks good. It definitely looks good. You know what I mean? But that's like, you know, you have, you know how you used to go to your grandmother's house or, you know, one of your aunt's house that had, you know, that had a couple of dollars or had more than most. And they had that one room that was super decorated, nice. It was beautiful furniture, but no one can go in there and sit down. So what's the sense of having the house? The room, if no one can go in there and live in this room, you know, and that's the same thing on Warren Street. And you got this Warren Street and you say, you know, it's revitalized and it's and it's vibrant for the city, but it's not doing anything for the city, not for the people that's in, again, that's in the margins. You know what I mean? They're not even, you know, who's working in even in the kitchens, even bussing the tables. You're going to see somebody that look like me and you in there? Go up and down Warren Street and see. Go just buy a sandwich and you know, one of them $4 sodas, you know, and see, you know, who's bussing your table. Mm-hmm. You know, even that, we ain't even good enough for that, you know. So it's different in that regard. You know, I used to run up and down Warren Street, man. I was in every store, department store, you know, houses, it was apartments all over Warren Street, you know what I mean, that we lived in. Now, man, look. Yeah.
I want to be respectful of your time. It is over the hour, 15 minutes about. I wanted to ask if there's anything else you think you want to share about that it's important to know about you or your experience.
No. Not a whole lot. Just, again, I am an optimist. You know what I mean? I do believe in this city. You know, I haven't given up on this city. I'm appreciative of those that's in this fight, you know what I mean? I'm really appreciative of those that's in this fight. I'm appreciative of the young people, you know, that's willing to listen and learn about their city and where they're headed, you know. But other than that, you know, no. I hope that's not disappointing. No,
it's been great talking to you. Thank you.